All right, y'all, welcome to the show. Let me warn you up front. It is early. My brain is not working, but nonetheless, I'm going to plow ahead and try to deliver a coherent show for y'all. So I do have a lot of stuff to get to today. I will be responding to Dave Rubin later in the show. He, of course, viciously smeared Crystal a few days ago. And boy, oh boy, do I have a lot to say in response. You're not going to want to miss that one. So we'll get to that. We also have some confirmation about Israel bombing safe zones. These are areas that they designated as safe, and then they repeatedly bombed it. We'll also get to updates on the protests outside the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It was a madhouse of some awesome, awesome protesting. And then later on, Bill Maher goes mental on some pro-Palestine protesters. He really hit a new low yet again. And then you're not going to want to miss the segment about the pro-Israel goon, the Zionist, who chanted kill the Jews just so he could get the pro-Palestine protesters arrested. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I have a couple clips that are just the quintessential cry bully bullshit. I have a Karen walking a dog pretending like pro-Palestine protesters are violent when they're not at all, and she's the one causing problems. So, again, we'll get to all that and much more. Everybody, do me a big favor. Please subscribe to the channel. It helps out massively. It costs you absolutely nothing. All right, let's go ahead and dive into it. We talked about this, honestly, a long time ago now. This was months and months ago. This idea that the IDF was purposefully bombing safe zones. They were also bombing the roads that are on the way to the safe zones. They would tell Palestinian civilians, hey, this place is not safe. You got to go to this other place. And then as they were on the road, they would bomb it and kill them. Okay, that's piece of evidence number 4612 that they're killing civilians on purpose. Now, this was already news. It was big news. And we were discussing it. It was all over new media and independent media. There were good outlets that do the work on the ground that were reporting this. But it was largely silent from Western media. It wasn't there. Well, now, months and months and months after the fact, as has been the trend with other Israeli atrocities, finally, Western media catches on and reports it. So this is on ABC News, and just, I'll say no more, watch the report.
March 26, 2024, 4 p.m., the aftermath of an airstrike in Rafah in southern Gaza, victims buried under the rubble. Rima Shabir is rushed to the hospital as her father attempts first aid. An NBC News investigation reveals that this is one of at least seven deadly strikes in areas our Gaza team filmed after the IDF had explicitly designated them as safe in December. This one in...
That's a lot of safe zones that were bombed. That doesn't look like an oopsie to me. What does it look like to you?
Rafah's al-Zuhur neighborhood, identified as one of three evacuation zones in a leaflet dropped over Gaza. And on the Israeli military's website, in a map last updated in December. When asked if there was anything more recent, the IDF told us the map was, quote, still accurate. Our investigation reveals that the IDF targeted al-Zuhur, al-Shabura, and Tal el-Sultan after it told residents to head there. On January 9th, an airstrike in Tal el-Sultan. The attack hits the home of the Nofal family there, killing 15. On February 12, 2024, our crews filmed the aftermath of an airstrike on al-Shabura camp. They asked us to go to the Shabura area because it is safe. This is the safe area? Look around you. What happened? This man says. On April 20th, at 10 p.m., also in the Shabura district, a building leveled. Among those killed, a pregnant woman, who NBC News reported on earlier this week. Her premature baby briefly survived, but died days later. We asked the Israeli military multiple times to comment on the strikes documented in our report, providing precise locations and dates. It addressed one of the attacks, replying, the IDF is not aware of any strike at the provided coordinates and times in the query, blaming Hamas for telling people to ignore military directives.
They're trolling us. The IDF commits war crime after war crime, and then they troll us about it. This is an open-handed slap to Joe Biden and the White House. And so far, they've just taken it. They just sit there and bleed. And he's willing to blow his election for a far-right genocidal freak like Netanyahu. God, man, I'm trying to not go too hard on the media here because at least they're reporting it. But this is months and months and months late, man. We knew about this a long, long time ago, and just now They're getting around to it.
The IDF will act against Hamas wherever it operates, with full commitment to international law. Human Rights Watch program director Sari Bashi tells us these strikes are not isolated incidents.
They go to the places they were told to go to, and then they get hit either by an airstrike or by a ground force invasion.
Is there anywhere safe in Gaza?
No, there's nowhere safe in Gaza.
For the almost 1.5 million Palestinians crowded in southern Gaza, there is nowhere left to flee. And for Rima Shabir, the girl whose father's bloodstained T-shirt told of his frantic attempt to revive his child, it was too late. Rima died in a place where she and others were told they would be safe from harm. Hala Gorani, NBC News, Tel Aviv.
There's no rebuttal to this. There's no reasonable response to this about why what the IDF did was okay. It's not. Any reasonable moral person would say it's not. But here we are. I don't know how many atrocities have to be committed for people to wake up. I don't know what can shake the White House out of their complacency. We already have over 40,000 Palestinians dead. If that number got over 100,000, would they finally grow a conscience and a little bit of a spine? Because I tend to doubt it. I tend to doubt it. This full dehumanization has happened. And that's why people can sit there and passively watch this and accept it. I got more for you. So the other day we discussed how Blinken floated this idea that, hey man, we know of some very specific IDF units that have committed atrocities. Definitely did human rights violations and war crimes. We're talking about proven torture, torture of the elderly, torture of young people. So we think we're going to sanction these people. This was the reporting from this guy, Barak Ravid, about a week ago. We talked about it on the show. Well, guess what? As I said in that segment, hey, the last time Biden did something like this or said he was going to do something like this, he didn't follow through. They picked out like the 3 or 5 most extremist illegal Israeli settlers, definitely violating international law in the West Bank. And they said, we're going to sanction them. Well, guess what? When nobody was looking, they rolled the sanctions back like a couple weeks later. So it was all a PR move. It was a virtue signal move to say, we're cracking down on the extremists in Israel. Then they rolled it back. So that's a green light if I've ever seen one. You tried to show some accountability and consequences, and then you said, ah, forget that, roll that back. Well, what message does that send? You guys do whatever the hell you want. And now, a unit that it's been proven they committed war crimes, an extremist IDF unit that was committing torture of innocent civilians. They said they were going to sanction them. Now they're like, meh, never mind. The State Department has put on hold its plan to impose sanctions on the IDF Netzah Yehuda Battalion for human rights violations in the occupied West Bank and is reviewing the issue in light of information Israel provided. And by the way, let's also point out this irony. All of the fighting, all of the ethnic cleansing and the genocide, it has been centered in Gaza because the Hamas attack on October 7th came out of Gaza. But now we're talking about torture done in the West Bank? The West Bank doesn't have Hamas. So even their fucking bullshit argument that they invoke every 12 seconds that every baby they kill is Hamas, that doesn't apply in any way, shape, or form, even theoretically, even with a stretch of an argument in the West Bank, where this torture is going on. So they said they would sanction. Guess what? They didn't sanction. I warned you. I told you this would happen. You guys remember Professor Rafat Al-Arir, poet, professor, was a very vocal voice on the side of Palestinian freedom and liberation. And he was murdered by the IDF. Now, the backstory as to how he got murdered is kind of wild. When there was that fake reporting going around that there were, oh, Hamas put babies in ovens. Remember that? In the wake of October 7th, that fake news story, that hoax was floating around. Well, he tweeted something along the lines of, were they cooked with seasoning or something like that? I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember the specifics, but it was poking fun at the absurdity of that notion, right? And then Barry Weiss chimed in. You guys know Barry Weiss. Free speech absolutist Barry Weiss. You know, I'm an intellectual Barry Weiss. She chimed in and she basically put a target on Rafat Al-Arir. And then within a couple weeks or a couple months, boom, the IDF murdered him. He even said, after Barry Weiss targeted him, hey, if something happens to me, I want you to know, I blame her. So she took his joke out of context and was pretending like he's in favor of massacring babies and putting them in ovens, right? And then put a target on his back and he was murdered. Well, guess what? Now his family was murdered too. Israel just slaughtered the eldest daughter of Professor Rafat Alarir, Shema, and his sole grandson, who was born shortly after Rafat's targeted killing in December. Shema, her husband, and son were killed in a direct airstrike on their apartment near Al Ramal Clinic in Gaza City. So yet again, they're doing it on purpose. They're killing civilians on purpose. There is no other reasonable conclusion. That's what's happening. We got more. Quds News Network tweeted this video out. I'm not going to play the video. It's dark. It's disturbing. During an Israeli occupation forces raid yesterday on Husan village near Bethlehem, soldiers shot tear gas inside a bakery and forced a Palestinian worker to close the doors, resulting in the killing of Hazim Dana, who suffocated inside. So as this user points out, gassed a Palestinian to death. Process it. I'll give you an update on the numbers. So look, these things used to come out every week or every couple weeks from Euromed Monitor, the human rights group. Then that slowed to a trickle, man. It's like every 2 or 3 weeks, and it's like every month, something like that. And the bottom line is they just don't have the personnel necessary anymore to get a totally accurate count. So it requires more work. It requires more time. And here's what we know as of right now. There's 42,510 Palestinians who have been killed. Of them, 38,621 are civilians. You do the math on that. The percentage of civilians killed is astronomically high. 15,780 children have been killed. 10,091 women have been killed. By the way, as I always point out, the discrepancy with these numbers and, say, the UN numbers or other numbers you might see coming out of Gaza is that these numbers include the people presumed to be dead under the rubble, which I think is a more accurate count. We have now we're nearly at 80,000 people injured, 137 journalists killed, the most deadly conflict for journalists ever. 2 million Palestinians out of 2.3 million are homeless. 131,000 homes have been completely destroyed. 281,000 homes have been partially destroyed. And the list goes on and on. 445 schools have been attacked. 322 healthcare facilities have been attacked, including 29 hospitals. There's over 900 healthcare professionals who've been attacked, and of those, 356 have been killed. What else is there to say, man? Some incredibly, incredibly dark stuff, but I'm glad to see that Western media is catching up. But of course, as per usual, it's too little too late. And just because the news is slowing down out of there doesn't mean that the reality on the ground isn't as tragic as we expect. It's dark, it's sad, it's pathetic. And the craziest thing is the answers are very straightforward, right? The answers are super straightforward. All that needs to happen is the U.S. needs to cut off the money, cut off the weapons, condemn Israel at the U.N., bring up some war crimes charges, take down Netanyahu and Ben-Gavir and Smotrich and the top Israeli commanders. And then we're starting to have a real conversation about justice. That's when we start having a real conversation about justice. But we are so far up Schitt's Creek without a paddle that people don't even have hope of even cutting off the money and the weapons, even though Israel's carrying out a genocide and an ethnic cleansing right in front of our eyes. Doesn't get more disgusting than that. So as you all know, we've had protests popping off at U.S. colleges and universities, protests in favor of Palestinians' rights. Sorry, I'm trying to take off my slippers as I talk to you right now. I'm not wearing socks, and so they're like sticking to my feet, and it's kind of gross and sweaty and ugh. All right, there we go. Let's try that again. So as all you guys know, we discussed the many, many pro-Palestine protests happening at colleges and universities across the U.S. The asks are very simple. They're saying, hey, to all the universities that have some sort of financial ties with Israel, cut that off, divest completely, kind of copying the model for apartheid South Africa and the pressure that led for them to change. So that's one thing. The other thing is stop the genocide, stop the ethnic cleansing. it's as straightforward and moral and just a protest movement as you can possibly have, okay? Well, a lot has been going on since we last talked about it. So, for example, I don't know if we discussed yet what happened in Austin, University of Texas. They sent in the cops, and the cops had their riot gear, and there was this standoff. And of course, it's incredibly goofy and dumb because these students aren't a threat to anybody. Everybody knows they're not a threat to anybody. And of course, people were making the comparison, hey, here's video of some neo-Nazis protesting and the cops are nowhere to be found. And then here's video of some pro-Palestine protesters protesting and the cops are there ready to crack down and arrest people and be aggressive, etc. I mean, it's beyond stupid. And then you had Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas. He was out there saying, we are not allowing any of this nonsense. This anti-Semitism. We hate it. We're against it. We're going to stop it. People were showing stuff he was saying a few months back when he passed a bill protecting free speech on college campuses. Why? Because in that context, everybody thought of it as the right is under attack and the right can't speak freely. So when it came to the right, oh yeah, I'll protect the right wingers saying what they want, but never the left wingers, never the left wingers. Total fucking hypocrite. There's also a number of examples at various colleges and universities of professors getting arrested. There was the head of a philosophy department, a middle-aged white woman who was getting arrested at one of these things. Guys, out of control. The closest comparison you can make is to the anti-Vietnam War protests. That's what this is like. Well, now the protest has spread, and it went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Now, the reason I love this is the White House Correspondents' Dinner is packed full of elite media, corporate media, people who like to snuggle up to power and trade access for positive coverage. It's also, an event where everybody just jacks each other off like they're so special, right? More on that in a minute. I'm going to play you a clip from that thing. Absolutely disgusting. But let's look at some of the protests that were happening outside of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So as people were going into the event, this happened. So we got some shame on you protests. Okay, here's some pictures. Scenes from outside the White House Correspondents' Dinner where protesters are supporting a boycott called for by the colleagues of journalists killed in Gaza. So here you have, they laid out all of these press vests and put the names of the journalists who were murdered by Israel. Remember, there's over 130 journalists who were murdered by Israel on purpose. On purpose. So here's Ahmed Alkara. All of these vests have blood on it and have the names of the killed on it. So in other words, hey, you guys are going to some fucking White House event jacking each other off about how we believe in freedom of the press. Yes, we do. Freedom of the press. First Amendment. Free speech. Truth to power. Yes. They go in there and jack each other off about how highfalutin they are and how they stick to their values and their ideals. Meanwhile, it's American weapons that are being used to massacre journalists in Gaza. And they're pointing that out and rubbing their fucking faces in it. More. Protesters have dropped a Palestinian flag out of the window of the Washington Hilton, where the White House Correspondents' Dinner is being held tonight. Look at this. Look at this. That's beautiful. God bless these people, man. Protesters are shutting down the entrance to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Quote, every time the media lies, a journalist in Gaza dies. More video. Here we go. Again, that's beautiful, man. The kids are all right. The kids are all right. Look, there's been a segment here and there in the various Western media outlets where they do a good job, right? I want to give credit where credit is due. But let's not kid ourselves. That's like 10% of the time. 90% of the time, they're not covering this properly. You guys remember that study that came out from The Intercept, which talked about the language used to describe Israeli victims versus Palestinian victims? Israeli victims get all the emotive language. This was a slaughter. This was a massacre. This was terrorism. This was horrific. When it's Palestinian civilians, totally neutral language, a passive voice, a blast took out some Palestinians. Gaza Health Ministry, run by Hamas, says. Man, they're on point here. All right, more. So Caitlyn Jenner went into the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I don't know why she was invited. I don't know why she's going. She's also a massive right-winger. Why she would go to Biden's thing, I don't know. I think she's just like a fucking clout chaser, right? She's just a clout whore. That's it.
I want to be where people are. Will they recognize me? And I want to be with the cool and the powerful people. I'm pro-genocide.
So she goes, and this is awesome. They just like yell at Caitlyn Jenner the entire time she's walking in. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I'll play some of it. So if you listen closely as this video goes on, she starts screaming something at them like, "You want to kill the Jews? Yeah, you want to kill the Jews?" She says something like that. Fucking total smear merchant. Again, God bless these protesters. They also did, as they entered the White House Correspondents' Dinner, protests staged a die-in to honor the 100-plus journalists Israel has killed in Gaza. We just discussed the number. I think it was 137 journalists who've been killed by Israel, again, on purpose. I have a bridge to sell you if you think it's not on purpose. So this is what it looked like out there. So the point here is like, oh, you guys pretend like you care about freedom of the press. You pretend like you're all about that. Meanwhile, U.S. weapons are going to murder journalists and you don't care. You don't care. You're not sanctioning the people who are doing it. You're not cutting off the money. You're not cutting off the weapons. You are charlatans and you are frauds. God bless. All right. So we also have this. Protesters hold a mock IDF execution of Palestinians outside the White House Correspondents' Dinner. They went in, man. These protesters went in. They had this all planned out, bro. So, I mean, look, I'll ask you guys, man, what are people supposed to do in the face of what we're witnessing, right? What are people supposed to do? You're just supposed to sit there and watch? You're supposed to sit there and take it? I've heard multiple people say that they're considering not paying taxes anymore because they know that their tax money is going towards massacring innocent civilians and carpet bombing babies. That's pretty understandable if you look at that and go, I don't know, man, it might be immoral to pay my taxes in this instance. What are people supposed to do? Sit there and take it, not look at the carnage, shut up and go to the voting booth anyway. You have to do something to try to stop it. Whether that's just using your voice and speaking up, whether that's protesting in this particular way. I mean, this is really shining a spotlight on all the atrocities and showing them that, look, you guys are going to get fucked with everywhere. You're going to get shamed everywhere you go. All these different speeches being given by these smug politicians getting interrupted. Good. Don't give them a minute of peace always make them rethink their pro-atrocity policies. I got this last one for you. So now we're going to jump to inside the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Colin Jost, I guess that's how you pronounce his name. He's the guy who delivered, he's the comedian, I guess, who delivered the, you know, the final speech before the president. Does the president go before or after? I think the president goes last. So I guess just before the president, he delivers a speech. And this is the exact sort of fake highfalutin nonsense that was being poked fun at and mocked outside of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Look at how just every which direction, jacking off elite media, jacking off the president, jacking off everybody in sight, man, everybody in that room, all those multimillionaire goons who suck at their fucking job and do propaganda on a daily basis. Just everybody. Oh, yeah, you're so special. I'm so special. You're so special. Oh, yeah. Here, watch.
My grandfather, a Staten Island firefighter, voted for you, Mr. President. He voted for you in the last election that he ever voted in. I mean, I'm sure someone else will vote twice in this election using his name, but that's just how the Democratic machine works. He voted for you, and the reason that he voted for you is because you're a decent man. My grandpa voted for decency, and decency is why we're all here tonight. Decency is how we're able to be here tonight. Decency is how we're able to make jokes about each other and one of us doesn't go to prison after. We go to the Newsmax after party.
How can you bring yourself to say things like this, knowing what Joe Biden is arming and funding? Is it that he only sees what, fellow Americans as human beings? Is that what it is? That the only thing that matters is domestic politics, and domestically he thinks the media is relatively free, you know, or either Joe Biden personally wouldn't do atrocities against journalists. Julian Assange. You know, what about whistleblowers and leakers? Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning, Daniel Hale. I genuinely don't understand. This guy has to know Joe Biden is arming and funding Netanyahu as Netanyahu is massacring journalists left and right in Gaza on purpose. By the way, not only killing journalists, killing the families of journalists on purpose. And you have the nerve to give this smug rant, this smug, self-satisfied rant? We're here because of decency. We're all decent people, yes? When we send money and weapons to kill journalists, it doesn't count because of enlightened liberal Western values. Our mistakes are just oopsies. Others are evil and part of their nature. What are we doing here, man? Fucking embarrassing. You want to talk about being in their ivory tower, having no clue about the revolt that's bubbling amongst the peasants underneath. You're looking at it right here. Boy, oh boy, do I have some stories for you. So one of the criticisms that has been leveled against Israel repeatedly for quite a while is that they epitomize what we refer to as the cry bully. So as you are the aggressor, you cry and whine and bitch and moan about how, no, you're the victim. And not only are you the victim, you're the world's worst victim. And now we're seeing this exact same dynamic play out at these pro-Palestine protests happening at colleges and universities across the country. So take a look at this. This one was so egregious, even the media had to say, okay, yeah. Yeah, the facts on that are kind of damning. Pro-Israel agitator shouts, kill the Jews, and gets everyone else arrested. So you have a hardcore Zionist trying to smear pro-Palestine protesters. So he says kill the Jews and gets all the pro-Palestine protesters arrested. Around 100 protesters were arrested on Saturday at a pro-Palestine encampment at Northeastern University, but not the one whose hate speech got everything shut down. This is astonishing. So this is like just using outright trickery and deceit and lies, and this is an agent provocateur move to smear the protesters. By the way, you're going to hear me say this a lot moving forward. Be very, very careful with what you're looking at, because I am convinced we have agent provocateurs in probably all of the pro-Palestine protests. Guys, Gavin McGinnis was at, I think it was either the Columbia or the NYU protest. Gavin McGinnis, founder of the Proud Boys, hard right-wing kook. I have no doubt they're trying to smear the protest movement. And whether that means secretly recording them and trying to get them to say things that are horrible, or using agent provocateurs to pretend like all these students are genocidal, they're on it. They're on it. They're doing it. Be very careful. Northeastern University had around 100 peaceful protesters arrested on Saturday at its Boston campus pro-Palestine encampment, claiming that there had been reports of protesters using anti-Semitic slurs. But according to witnesses, the protester who spewed hate speech was a pro-Israel counter-protester. On Saturday morning, Northeastern Vice President for Communications, Renata Neal, released a statement announcing that the protests on Centennial Common would be cleared by campus police and local law enforcement. In the statement, she explained that the reason they were clearing the encampment was because of the presence of hate speech at the site. So let me get this straight. Any Zionist, any pro-Israel goon can show up and shout something genuinely anti-Semitic and take away the free speech rights of all the pro-Palestine protesters who are out there because they want to stop the genocide? What a sick, sick situation. By the way, this is why you have free speech. You have free speech particularly for moments like this, so that you don't undermine people and take away their rights based on nothing at all. And just for the record, even in a situation where somebody on the pro-Palestine side genuinely said something really bad and anti-Semitic and wrong, even in that instance, it is protected speech. Go read the Skokie case. The Supreme Court is very clear. Even quote-unquote hate speech is protected speech. That's the way this country works. But no. A fucking liar gets everybody's First Amendment rights taken away. Quote, what began as a student demonstration 2 days ago was infiltrated by professional organizers with no affiliation to Northeastern. So not even another student. Last night, the use of virulent anti-Semitic slurs, including kill the Jews, crossed the line. We cannot tolerate this kind of hate on our campus. Across the country, university administrators and politicians alike have publicized reports of anti-Semitic speech at student-led protests as part of their justification for arresting students and disbanding protests, urging them to divest from Israel. These accounts often vary from eyewitness accounts of the peaceful protesters. All right, we don't need to go on. You get the gist of it here. But by the way, you want to talk about anti-Semitism? Let's talk about banning groups like Jewish Voice for Peace. Let's talk about a crackdown on that group. What is it? Not in my name or not in our name. These are Jewish-led pro-Palestine groups, and they've been muzzled more than anybody. You want to have a conversation about anti-Semitism? Let's have a conversation about anti-Semitism. This one is really something. So this is at Northwestern. You have this random woman walking her dog through the encampment, and she calls the police on the protesters. Why? Because she wants to. Because she's against them being pro-Palestine and them expressing their First Amendment rights. You don't believe me? Let's watch. This video is going to infuriate you. It's going to make your blood boil when you see how casually this woman is acting as she's trying to shut down their rights. Watch this.
It's not in harm's way. Nobody is going to hurt them. Nobody is going to attack them. This person is not in harm's way.
They are free to leave.
Nobody is going to hurt them. Nobody is going to attack them. This person is not in harm's way.
Yes, they're right in front of me right now. They're holding signs.
This person is not in harm's way.
I need funds, genocide. I need help. I know that, but they're surrounding me. They won't let me move.
No, you are free to move. You are free to.
She said they're surrounding me. They won't let me move. Look at this. Look at this.
She is free to move.
You are free to move. You are free to move.
She's free to move. She's free to leave. She is free to leave. No one is surrounding her.
That poor dog, man. That poor dog has an absolutely psychopathic owner.
Nobody is surrounding you.
She is free to leave.
There's Western University, these are students. They're surrounding me. I can take a picture.
She's free to leave. No one is surrounding her.
I need help.
No one is surrounding her.
No one is surrounding her.
I'm just walking my dog. I need help.
She's free to leave.
I'm a Jewish American. I need help.
She said, I'm a Jewish American. I need help. This is just like that viral video from the other day where a guy was talking about his wife. His wife put on a shirt that said Jew on the front and had Israel on the back. She walked out in the middle of one of these protests. And like all the pro-Palestine students, nobody's even looking at her. Nobody's paying attention to her. Nobody cares. She's standing there and this guy's like, my wife is so brave. Look at how brave she is standing there with nothing happening. So brave. So brave. What is with this fucking burning desire on the Zionist side to be viewed as victims? What is with, it's almost like there's a correlation here. The more atrocities are committed in the name of Zionism, the more they ramp up the we are the victims bullshit. And it culminates like this. By the way, you dumb bitch, you're being recorded. Who the fuck do you think is going to defend you in this scenario? Somebody could be the most hardcore Zionist. Rabbi Shmuley couldn't fucking defend this. Look at you. Desperately wanting to be a victim. Desperately, and here's the point, wanting to shut down the free speech of pro-Palestine protesters. They don't want to have a debate. They don't want to have a discussion because they know they lose on the merits 10 out of 10 times. That's what this is.
Please come and help me. I'm wearing a white Adidas shirt. I have a dog with me. Okay, dog, I need help.
I need help. Yeah, she needs help. Perfectly emblematic of this current moment, isn't it? Perfectly emblematic. I'll give you another one. At the end of this clip, a pro-Israel protester tries to start a fight, calls someone the N-word, and spits on them. Will he be vilified by politicians? Will this clip be shown on every media station as representative of supporters of Israel? And that's a phenomenal point, right? That's a phenomenal point. Because what happens is the media will fish around these pro-Palestine protesters and try to find the worst individual or the worst single instance of a chant. And then they say, this defines the entire group. Now, again, the goals are clear from the protesters. Divest from Israel. That's what they want these universities to do. And let's stop the genocide. That's their goal. That's it. But what do? Try to find the most fringe example of the biggest loser and asshole in the group and say, that defines the group. Okay, well, now I've given you, what, three examples? When I have more I could probably give you as well of total cry bully, fake victim bullshit, and aggression on the part of the Zionists in some instances. And the media is not going to take this. Oh my God, not only is Israel committing a genocide, but all of their supporters appear to be totally sociopathic and craven and insane. All right, and I'll give you this as well, guys. Representative Richie Torres and Mike Lawler plan to introduce the Columbia Act, a bill that would create anti-Semitism monitors at select colleges. Because, you know, the crackdown on the pro-Palestine speech has not been authoritarian enough. Now, let me ask you, do you think they're going to be fishing for actual anti-Semitism? Or are they going to take any sort of pro-Palestine activism and define it as anti-Semitic and crack down on that? How many times have we seen it? If somebody says, from the river to the sea, they're called anti-Semitic. Somebody says Intifada, they're called anti-Semitic. Somebody says Free Palestine, they're called anti-Semitic. What they're trying to do is shut down the free speech of pro-Palestine protesters. We haven't advanced a fucking millimeter since the days of the anti-Vietnam War protests. The same sort of extreme crackdown. Look, I think a lot of people, they just want another Kent State situation. That's what they want. They want to see some of these protesters get gunned down and then scare the rest of them off from saying another fucking word. And it's a very illuminating moment to see who lines up with the powerful, who lines up on the side of the authoritarians, who plays the cry bully game. It's a very, very illuminating moment. And if this doesn't make your blood boil, I don't know what will. Dave. What are we going to do with you, man? What are we going to do with you? So over the weekend, me and Crystal, minding our business, we were going camping with the kids. Fun time. And turns out, I'm scrolling through Twitter at night, and I come across this from Dave Clips. Dave Rubin has self-described mental breakdown on his show, goes off on Crystal, drops the F-bomb. No one is safe. So for those of you who don't know the Dave Clips person, he's a well-known hater of Dave Rubin. So this is sort of like a parody account that makes fun of Dave Rubin. But as soon as I saw that, I knew, oh, I know. I know what he's mad about. He's mad about Crystal's appearance on Piers Morgan. Why? Because Crystal went in there and defended the pro-Palestine protesters and went after Israel. In other words, she's doing the thing that every reasonable person on the planet would do at this moment. See, he's in the business of doing an authoritarian crackdown on those protesters. He's in the business of smearing pro-Palestine folks. That's what he does. So anybody defends those protesters, and oh, he's sitting there like, let's go. So before we play this, let me give you a little bit of background about Dave. Dave used to be with the Young Turks Network back in the day. At the time, he fancied himself a progressive. He had a falling out with the Young Turks. It was pretty much over the issue of Israel. That's like the issue that made him feel like, I can't be here anymore. These are terrible people. It was that mixed with Cenk Uygur debating Sam Harris, and he felt like Cenk was unfair to Sam Harris, and this led to him leaving. And then he went through this whole big arc of like, why I left the left. For a while, he was saying like, I'm the last liberal on earth. I'm the last sane liberal. My job is to be a liberal and tell the conservatives they're right about anything, everything. He went from that to now he's just like, okay, mask off. I can't. I'm just a fucking conservative, right? And ever since he did the full transition, people are much less interested in what he has to say. Because there's no angle of like, well, he's a liberal and he's telling us we're right. Now he's just one of you guys, and he's also really fucking bad at his job, right? I mean, I got a million bones to pick with somebody like Ben Shapiro, but Ben Shapiro would run circles around Dave Rubin in the field of doing conservative propaganda. Okay. So I give you all that. Now let's see what he had to say. We're going to break this down as we go.
These pathetic leftists, like Crystal Ball, go live in Gaza and see how it works out for your leftist ideas and your off-the-shoulder outfits. Like, it will not go well. And Crystal is defending a bunch of people that would gladly behead her for all of her progressive views.
By the way, the title of the video calls Crystal a Hamas apologist. A Hamas apologist. In the video that he's critiquing her on, she's asked directly by Piers Morgan, is Hamas evil? You know what her answer is? Yes. They're terrorists. Funny how her saying the thing that he wants her to say doesn't change his take at all. It's almost, Dave, like you're lying. It's almost like you're a smear merchant. It's almost like, no matter what some pro-Palestine person says, you're immediately going to... Hamas defender! Hamas defender! Let me guess. The other move you pull is anti-Semite! Anti-Semite! This is his whole brand now. The guy who was the free speech bro 4.5 seconds ago is cheering on the crackdown of college protesters. His whole thing used to be, there's no more free speech on college campus. We need to change that. Now his whole thing is, we need no free speech on college campus. Okay. All right. We're just getting started. Let's keep going.
Crystal is defending a bunch of people that would gladly behead her for all of her progressive views, but that's just, you know, progressives aren't the brightest, the brightest people around.
Super ironic coming from Dave to say, these people you're aligning yourself with. She's not aligning herself with Hamas, thank you very much. But these people you're aligning yourself with, they fucking hate you, bro. They hate you. Dave, when you announced you were having two kids with your male husband, more than half of your fucking audience was shitting on you, calling you disgusting. Saying that shouldn't even be legal. That shouldn't even be allowed. You want to know why? Because you courted a right-wing audience. And a lot of them believe in one man, one woman, traditional marriage. And so when you said, I'm having kids, you probably expected a warm, hey, yay, Dave, we love you, Dave. Meanwhile, you got a bunch of people shitting on you, including other conservative commentators like Mark Dice, who called you an abomination in the eyes of God. There was such a backlash to Rubin saying he's having a kid with his husband that he went on Glenn Beck's show on The Blaze and did a humiliating interview where Beck was saying to him, yeah, you know, you're sinning and this is not right and we disagree with it, but I mean, you're kind of a nice guy, so maybe we'll like semi let you get away with it. And he's like, I'm sorry, I'm gay. So for this guy to say those words is fucking rich. It's a classic example, textbook psychological projection.
I would point out was overwhelmingly peaceful.
She's just an absolute clown. She's a liar and a manipulator, and she knows they're calling for violence. And these are the same people, the same progressives who offered us trigger warnings and all of the rest of the nonsense, right? Safe spaces and everything else when it came to discussing other things.
First of all, Crystal has never advocated for trigger warnings or safe spaces. So for you to bring that up is just fucking bullshit, because what you're doing is you're saying, Crystal is the left. I am defining her as this whole group, the left. The left is in favor of trigger warning and safe spaces. I'm not. Crystal's not. Most of the leftists I know are not in favor of those things. So for you to say, for you to argue, it's arguing against a straw lefty. It's arguing against a straw lefty. But notice the bigger point there. What he said is, oh, she's an absolute clown because she's saying most of the protesters are peaceful. Dave, that is a literal, verifiable fact. That's not an opinion. That's not up in the air. That's not debatable. It's a fact. Go ask Dave Rubin this very basic question. Dave, all these protesters, these thousands and thousands of protesters on college campuses all across the U.S., what's motivating them? Why are they doing it? Do they just want to kill all the Jews? Is that what they're doing? Do you really believe that that's what they believe, Dave, and that's why they're out there? That they want to do another Holocaust? They want to genocide the Jews? Even you are not dumb enough to believe that. So what's the actual reason they're out there? It's very simple. They're telling you what they're in favor of. Divest from Israel. They want all of these various colleges and universities to divest their financial entanglements with Israel. Perfectly reasonable. And beyond that, stop the genocide and stop the ethnic cleansing. Stop arming and funding a government that is carpet bombing babies on a regular basis. That's what they're in favor of. You know that's what they're in favor of, but you can't engage with it honestly. So what do? Smear them. You just implied they're all violent. My ass cheeks, they're all violent. You know they're not all violent. Again, Mr. Free Speech. Mr. Free Speech, suddenly, when it's the issue of Israel, it's out the window. They're all violent, crackdown on them. I'm sure he was cheering the people calling for the National Guard to be brought in. He was cheering various police departments cracking skulls. This is the kind of guy who would look at a chant like, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, and say it's a genocidal chant. That's who he is. He would look at somebody who says intifada and say, that is definitionally calling for the genocide of all Jews, because he's a fucking liar. He's the liar here.
Now it's just like unhinged hate that we have to absolutely defend. By the way, everyone has the right to free speech and the First Amendment protects.
You were just calling all the protesters violent. You're in favor of them cracking down on the protests. You don't get to do that and then turn around and say, but I still believe in free speech, even though I just advocated against free speech.
Your right to free speech. What they are purposely doing is getting as close to directly calling for violence as they absolutely can, because they're, you know, you can say a lot of things about these people, but they are clever in the way they use our system against us. That is what they do. Nasty little hoe. She is one ugly hoe.
Now, when I first saw this, I was ready to go off, but I've been informed he actually wasn't talking about Crystal here. Now, by the way, that doesn't make it okay. Who's he referring to? Ilhan Omar's daughter, who organized some of these protests, and he's calling her a nasty little hoe. Yeah, very fucking substantive point there, Dave. Way to really use logic and reason and facts to drill your point home. This is all you fucking have? Is pathetic name-calling? This is all you have. Do you have any substantive points at all?
And we're just doing it this way, whatever. It's a special show, just whatever. Come on, guys. Fucking pathetic journalist, whatever you want to call that guy, the host of the I'm in a mood today. I've really just had it with these fucking people. I can't tell. I don't know. Something about being at the Passover Seder last night and telling the story about Passover and then watching what this stuff's going on. It really got to me. That's our show for today, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you tomorrow.
That's an appropriate way to end it. So look, for him, he has one total no-go zone. There seems to be only one thing he is genuinely 100% on the side of, and that is defend Israel no matter what. Anybody who utters a peep against Israel, they're an anti-Semite, they're a Hamas apologist. He goes right to the fucking Likud Hasbara playbook, goes right down the list of the shit that they say. So I just want to put in perspective for you, because he's painting Crystal and pro-Palestine folks as unreasonable on this issue. Guys, we have stuff from a fucking decade ago, which shows you what he really thinks about this. This is back when he was still with TYT. And they're debating the issue of Israel bombing Gaza. This was during 2014's Operation Protective Edge, where, by the way, according to the UN, Israel killed 82% civilians in their bombing raid. So look at this back and forth. They really nail his ass to the wall here, because he's kind of, in a weaselly way, defending the bombing of schools, while then he'll back away at the last minute. No, I'm not actually saying that, bro, even though I'm saying that. Watch this.
All right, so my question is this. How many Hamas members must hide in a school here in L.A. versus bomb that school? How many? I don't think we bombed that school under any circumstance here in the U.S. So if we had 100 Hamas members hiding at my kid's school, and they were firing rockets from my kid's school into Beverlywood, you think the U.S. government would bomb that school? They would not bomb that school. And I would fight like hell for them to not bomb that school, even if my kids were killed by the people who were sending those bombs from that school. Bombing schools is just wrong, period. Period. Whether they have human shields or not. And it makes me so sad to see so many good people make these ridiculous mental gymnastics to somehow justify that. That is wrong. If we can't get agreement on that, then we can't agree on the 67 borders or anything else. We have to say Israel is absolutely and categorically wrong to bomb hospitals and bomb schools. And you can't just say, well, Hamas is making us do it. That is so weak. And you don't believe it. You don't. You're too good and too smart to believe that. Okay. There is under no circumstances. I don't care how many.
Wrong. That's the only part Steve-O's wrong about.
Members are at a school in the U.S. Would we bomb that school? We bombed the school because it's full of Palestinians. That's why we bombed them in Gaza.
You think the United States, maybe I'm not catching what you're throwing here. You don't think the United States, if there was a group of Al-Qaeda terrorists that were shooting rockets towards your house, 10 miles away, 15 miles away, you wouldn't want them to bomb that place as they were shooting rockets at your house and possibly digging tunnels under your daughter's...
I would fight like hell for that to not happen if that school was full of children.
And let me tell you...
Yeah, it's so terrible. Terrible. I'm not defending it. It's horrible. War is horrible.
No. War is horrible. War is horrible.
Dave, you are refusing to say that it's wrong... That Israel is taking an action that is categorically wrong in bombing those schools. That is wrong.
It's a war crime. You can't. That's murder. That's not war. Well, that's not war, Dave. You keep saying war is horrible. That's not war. That's murder on purpose. Those people don't have defense. The UN.
Old school Jimmy Dore here. Old school Jimmy Dore.
I called the Israeli army, begged them to let the people leave that building who were seeking shelter. They said no. They killed them. That's murder, Dave. That's not war. That's not, I understand that Hamas is probably wrong, right? But still, I'm not saying that Hamas is right or Israel's right or how to solve this conflict. I'm saying that that tactic is a war crime. It's murder. It doesn't solve problems. It makes things worse. And you shouldn't defend it because you kind of are.
I don't know that I'm defending it as much as I think it's easy for all of us to sit here and tell a country under attack what to do.
Yes, it's very easy for me to tell people not to kill children in a school that with a blue UN flag over it.
Let me say it's really easy.
It doesn't take any thought.
You might have
and
a more difficult
time. If you have to think
time.
About that, I say, what's wrong with
Jimmy,
you?
Jimmy, come on. You might have a more difficult time discussing that if it was your family that was being attacked.
Dave Bomb Schools Reuben. That's his new nickname. Dave Bomb Schools Reuben.
That's not right, Dave. Okay? If my family were murdered by Hamas... And they wanted to murder me too, but they're holed up in a school. I wouldn't want to bomb that school. I would just not want to bomb that school. I don't believe you would have a nice intellectual exercise
about what we would do in a theoretical situation.
I would not bomb a school with several hundred kids who didn't kill my kids.
So this was the beginning of the end for him with TYT. It was the issue over Israel. It was that mixed with Cenk versus Sam Harris, and he thought Cenk was being unfair to Sam Harris, and Dave was on the side of Sam Harris and, you know, oh, Muslim's bad, Muslim's bad, Muslim's bad, 24/7. And so for a while, he was like a Harris acolyte on his show when he started his new show, Reuben Report, and left TYT. And then again, the transition, he kept going further and further and further and further right. But now, look, Dave called the pro-Palestine protesters and Israel absolute clowns, called them pathetic, was questioning their intelligence. Here's the guy who's questioning somebody else's intelligence. Here are some of Dave Rubin's predictions over the years.
So the one way that I think we get out of some of the craziness is the Democrats kind of get crushed. That there is good. I'm not going to call it a red wave. I just, you know, we don't need these silly labels on all these things. But I suspect that the Republicans will do better. The Democrats, they sort of need to be destroyed in this election. So there's
spoiler alert: Democrats won that year. Republicans did not.
No way they're going to accept the election this time. And I do think Trump's going to win most likely in a landslide.
Trump's going to win in a landslide. He says in 2020.
Win, and he's going to win in a bigger way than he won last time. Sounds
another call for a Trump. Massive victory, a landslide in 2020.
Easy, but Trump's going to get 30% of the black vote, and they know it, and that's why they're freaking out. I tweeted.
Trump did not get 30% or 20% of the black vote.
About a year ago, that Trump's going to get 30% of the black vote. That's an insane. No one in their right mind would say that.
What was 15%?
15%.
70% approval.
Yeah, I'm guessing it could be around 30%. I think that 30% is going to break very hard to Trump. That's not going to show up in the polls because they won't say it in the polls.
All right.
But even bigger.
Spoiler alert, didn't happen.
You're getting Donald Trump elected because the average person is finally, for at least as long as the rest of us can be on Twitter and everywhere else, the average person is able to see the truth. And look, if it's me and Scott Baio and Larry Elder versus Gavin Newsom, Barack Obama, and Kamala Harris, I like our chances. I really do. So.
He's talking about the California recall election where it was Larry Elder versus Gavin Newsom. He's like, me and Scott Baio and Larry Elder, I like our chances against Obama. What?
Bring it, guys. And please, if you live in California, please vote. We know there is going to be fraud. We absolutely know. So is it crazy to think that it might be a possibility that come election night, if they're counting ballots and it's kind of looking close and Larry maybe is winning, do you think it might be possible that they're going to be like, oh, you know, we can't call this election, or just the general California machine, which who's tabulating these votes? It's the entire machine, the entire system here.
Some really good predictions there. Here's a very famous Rubin moment of Joe Rogan dismantling him without even trying, talking about having regulations and building codes when it comes to construction.
Assuming that the government regulators understand code correctly and aren't just on the take or, just basically just taking money and signing off on things. I mean,
they inspect things, man. Have you ever had a construction project done?
Yeah, well, I got my house last year and we had to go through all the inspections and had several guys come back.
We
didn't build it, no.
Right. There's a big difference between an insurance inspector and a code inspector. Code inspectors are very different. When you're having a house built, and I've had construction projects where I had to explain to people and go through it with builders, they're making sure that the house doesn't fucking fall on you, that the power lines, you know, are done correctly, that all the electricity is done correctly, the pipes are laid in correctly, your septic system or your sewage system is correctly.
Yeah. Do you think that could be privatized then? See, cause again, I just think it's an interesting
regulations.
Yeah.
How would it? How
would you could have
there would be no incentive?
Well, you could have companies that their job would be to make
inspect.
Sure to inspect. Yeah, and you
but
hire.
They wouldn't have the threat of law to enforce these things. Like if someone is building something and they're not up to code, they lose their license and they can't build.
Right.
If you privatized it, what's the incentive for them to follow the guidelines?
Yeah. So this is where I'm not telling you that I'm calling for all this. I just think intellectually it's just an interesting space to argue something.
By the way, he never appeared on Joe Rogan's show after this. Take from that whatever you will. Take from that whatever you will. But I think it's time, y'all. I think it's time.
And I have to say that my brain is still in recovery mode from taking in so many high-level important ideas. Mm. And I have to say that my brain is...
His brain is in recovery mode because it's very highfalutin and high-minded and intellectual to accuse everybody who disagrees with you on the issue of Israel of being a Hamas apologist. An anti-Semite, a Hamas apologist. The protesters are violent. Very high-minded ideas. By the way, in conclusion, let's be clear about this. Why is he salty? Why is he butthurt? No pun intended on the butthurt thing. Because here's the reality of what's happening in Gaza. There have been 42,510 Palestinians killed. Of them, 38,621 are civilians. Over 15,000 are children. Over 10,000 are women. People are protesting this. They want to divest from Israel. They want to stop the carpet bombing of babies. Crystal went on Piers Morgan, repped that position. So naturally, you got to do a hit job. You got to smear. You got to say, oh, why don't you go live in Gaza? Huh? Why don't you go live in Gaza? Yeah, great point, Dave. I love it when these people pretend like Israel is some bastion of progressive values. You can't even get gay married in Israel. You can't even have interfaith marriage in Israel. Spare me your, we're the enlightened Western civilization. Yeah, the fucking ethno-state theocracy with psycho, ultra-Orthodox, illegal settlers. Yeah, real bastion of fucking progressivism over there. Spare me. The only person that's pathetic, the only person that's an absolute clown in this discussion, Dave, is you. All right, y'all, Bill Maher is at it again. He is at it again. He's now made it his personal mission to smear all of the pro-Palestine protesters around the country. He's doing the cranky old man get off my lawn bit now. You know, he loves to I'm the fucking enlightened centrist, bro. I got the truth on my side. And I don't agree with the left. I don't agree with the right. I'm above it all, bro. I'm above it all. So this new rule segment, as you're about to see, the argument is, man, you idiots don't even understand. These protesters are just narcissists. They're just selfish. That's why they're doing what they're doing. Let's watch.
And finally, new rule, someone needs to tell the people who block traffic in the name of a cause, no one likes you. And you're probably hurting your cause.
I find it funny when they do this, like, I'm going to give these protesters advice on how to do it bit, when he doesn't agree with the protesters anyway. Yeah, take the good faith advice from me, the guy who hates your cause, on how you can advance your cause. And if I was Bill Maher at this point in time, I wouldn't be talking about nobody liking people. Because he's sort of on the top of that list, isn't he?
Activists for ending the war in Gaza have taken to gathering on roads and bridges and stopping commuters from crossing. It happened last week in New York, in San Francisco, Chicago, Seattle. They also blocked traffic here on the 405, but no one noticed. What they did notice was this, that you have to be pretty dumb to think that the way to bring people around to your point of view is to make them late to pick up their kids from daycare. And that's what most normies are thinking. I have a kid. I have a job. And yes, I'm sure there are injustices on both sides in the Middle East, as there are injustices all over the world. But I'm going to be late for work, something you protesters on the bridge seem to have the luxury of not having to worry about, which seems kind of privilegy.
Oh, yeah, Don Lemon. Yeah, smugly shake your head, you bitch. Look, here's the thing. I have no problem with critiquing the tactics and the strategies of protesters. In fact, I do it all the time. We've had these debates, we've had these discussions, and I have a very strong and rigid hierarchy of like what I think is the best way to protest. And it's very clear which ways are least likely to affect a positive outcome. So I'm open to that conversation. I'm open to that discussion. But let's be clear. What Maher is doing here is laundering his hatred for their cause through strategy mongering, right? Like, oh, I'm not sure you're going about this the right way. Let me give you the way that you can do this where it would actually be. You support the carpet bombing of Gaza. Let's put that front and center, right? So what do you have? Oh, they're unemployed, these people. They're lazy. As it says in the title, they have collective narcissism. So now it's not just disagreeing with strategy. You are smearing their intentions and their character. And that I won't abide. Look, I agree that a better way to protest is to, like a lot of these people did, block the ships that are going to go to Israel that have all the weapons. I agree that the best way to protest is interrupt a Joe Biden speech, interrupt a Nancy Pelosi speech, interrupt a Trump speech. I agree that that's better. I agree that that's better. But you bet your ass, if they did only that, Maher would still be out there saying the same fucking thing. That they're narcissists and they're unemployed and they're lazy and they're authoritarian and they don't believe in free speech. Jonathan Chait wrote an article about the protesters interrupting Joe Biden and said, this is authoritarian, this is illiberal. Well, then how the fuck do you want people to protest a genocide? If they can't protest politicians directly, if they can't block ships with weapons going to bomb children, what the fuck can they do? You can sit there silently in a corner where nobody will ever see you or notice you, and you can do your goofy little chants, and then that's it. And nothing will change, nothing will get done, but I'll pat myself on the back for finding a way to neutralize the protests. That's what this is about.
Your hands to the street, because your hands don't have to do any work today.
By the way, Bill Maher, real hard worker. I don't know if you guys know that. Mr. Fucking, I do one show a week where I give my opinions. Oh yeah, Bill. You're the real beating heart of America, you fucking prick.
I'm not saying there aren't sincere passions about Gaza, especially among people from the region, but social justice warriors, for a lot of them, it seems like it's more about the warrioring than about whatever the cause is. If you really cared about apartheid so much, which Israel does not actually practice, Arabs there vote, they serve in parliament, they sit on the judiciary.
How does the West Bank work, Bill? Gaza is an open-air prison. Everybody knows that. How does the West Bank work? There absolutely is apartheid. And it's not me saying it. It's all the top human rights groups in the world saying it. God. He's such a liar. And now he's going to do it. Why don't you protest Muslim country? Well, first of all the people who want to boycott Israel, in my experience, they also want to boycott Saudi Arabia, right? That's point number one. Point number two is, because we fund and back Israel, you absolute moron. Since we arm it and fund it, we are at least partly responsible for their actions. Same with Saudi Arabia, which is why all these people want to do a boycott of Saudi Arabia too. But it's the whataboutism. Well, look at other bad things happen in the world. Got you.
With the hundreds of millions of women in the world who live under a true apartheid, a gender apartheid of the most brutal kind.
The word is fucking apartheid, not apartheid, you literal-minded bitch.
I'll wait.
My joke didn't land because I'm a smug asshole. That's on you. That's your fault, okay? Look at this guy's face. Look at this fucking loser. Look at his face. Look at his face. Oh.
Are you really speaking truth to power, or do you just think you look cool in a cafeya?
By the way, Mar started it. Now there's 17 different flavors and varieties of these sort of absolute losers who are out there speculating about the true psychological reason, the intentions of these protesters. And people are saying, oh, they want to get laid. They want to be cool. They want to fit in. That's why they're doing what they're doing. Spare me the armchair psychoanalysis, okay? Spare me the Freudian psychobabble bullshit. I think what's happening here is people are tired of seeing babies die from carpet bombing. Yeah, it gets a little sickening when you see the 17th kid being pulled out from underneath the rubble. That is plenty enough for people to care enough to get out on the streets and protest over this. But they can't fathom that. You want to know why? Because they're the selfish ones. They're the narcissistic ones. He's the one who morally fucking preens and postures on TV every single week. He's the guy who does it. These protesters are taking time out of their lives, and even though he won't acknowledge it, they are busy lives. These are the people who are taking time out of their lives to say, hey, stop mass murdering. It's the most understandable and reasonable reason to protest, but they still get smeared as being narcissistic and selfish. Really? The king of fucking narcissism himself is going to accuse others of being narcissistic?
It's really just the new Che Guevara t-shirt. Another historical figure you never researched and so think is a hero, but was actually a sadistic, racist monster fighting for communism, the worst form of government ever. But these are small matters.
Yeah, I'm sure Bill Maher is really studied up. He's a big-time intellectual when it comes to stuff like Che Guevara and his history.
Small matters when activism merges with narcissism. Less about the cause and more about me. Look at me. Watch me. And if you like...
Your show is literally, watch me. I'm going to give my opinions. I'm the contrarian prick. That's your whole fucking brand. God damn, glass house, motherfucker.
I'm fighting injustice. Remember to like and subscribe.
Put on a YouTube video where there's a like and a subscribe button right underneath your dumbass. The name of the show is Real Time with Bill Maher. You've made a career out of doing the narcissism shtick. And you're attacking others because they're doing that. They're not. But they're doing that to stop a genocide. Even if they were doing it with the intentions of like, I'm going to let everybody know that I'm anti-genocide and virtue signal about it. That's still better than being on the wrong side of this. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to have an aneurysm.
In February, a sad, confused man even lit himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy. And in his last Facebook post, he said, many of us like to ask ourselves, what would I do if I was alive during slavery? Interesting cocktail question, sir. And I guess the right answer is kill myself.
What a smug asshole. He's talking about Aaron Bushnell, right? I would like Mar to engage honestly with his hypothetical and also engage honestly with the notion of like some German person living in Nazi Germany, knowing about the Holocaust and the atrocities, and then they light themselves on fire in protest of it. What would he say about that? What would he say about that? My guess is it wouldn't be snide fucking bullshit like he's saying here.
I've actually fixed the problem if General Ulysses S. Grant had immolated himself and his last words were, hey, Lincoln, are you using that log?
General Ulysses S. Grant. He was in a war. He was in a war. Are you saying that these pro-Palestine protesters should pick up arms and fight a war against Israel? Is that what you're saying? Because that's the analogy here. If you're going to compare a war to these protests, what you're saying is, well, it would have won it for them if they picked up arms and they went into a war with Israel. Is that what you want? God. He's not even trying. Look at this guy's fucking chompers. Look at this guy. Is this guy from that movie Get Out? He looks like he's from that movie Get Out.
I would vote for Obama a third time if I could.
And then last week, another sad, confused man set himself on fire at the Trump trial in New York. So you can tell yourself you're a martyr for the Palestinian cause, but it's a lot less special when the next guy does it for Stormy Daniels.
Okay, but that's not even why he set himself on fire. Oh, God. You know, he's just making jokes. He doesn't even care about the facts of the case. That guy was just a general all-around conspiracy theorist. What he did had nothing to do with Trump. He just wanted the most eyeballs on it, so he did it outside the Trump trial. I don't know why I'm bothering to, like, honestly respond in a factual manner to this absolute goon. Look at him.
I don't want to diminish how sad it is that someone would take their own life for any reason, but maybe from now on, before anyone commits an act of civil disobedience, they should ask themselves a few questions, like, is the most important thing in my life something I hadn't heard of 6 months ago? Do I even know?
Yeah, I think the most important thing in everybody's life is if there's an ongoing genocide, and we are arming it, and we are funding it, and we are backing it, to do everything we can to stop our government from arming and funding it and backing it. And maybe get some war crimes charges rolled out there to arrest people like Netanyahu and Smotrich and Ben-Gavir and the top Israeli generals and commanders. Yeah. I think that is more important than anything. You know, I got a lot of hobbies. I got a lot of things I love, right? I'm a big golfer. I try to golf as much as I possibly can, even though I have, you know, busy schedule, busy life, all that stuff. Is stopping a genocide more important than me hitting a little white ball around a field? Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, you can make an argument, of course, that like your own family and your own kids, protecting them, taking care of them, that's number one. And that's fair. And I think everybody agrees with that. But just outside of that, stopping the arming and funding of a literal genocide and ethnic cleansing, that is the most important thing. In fact, I'd go as far as to say it's fucking obvious that that's the most important thing. But we live in an era now, we live in an age which is so fucking immensely disconnected, so atomized. Everybody is so individualistic that a lot of the times just, I don't know, that has nothing to do with me. Whatever you look at anything, that's got nothing to do with me. If there's like, we could have like a colossal mass shooting today, it wouldn't make as big of a splash as, you know, the previous 48 of them. Because we've had so many mass shootings so many times that if it happened somewhere else, just like, well, it wasn't me, it wasn't my family, so, you know, what are you going to do? There was a time when if there was a mass shooting, it would be a big, oh my God, this is a big deal. We need to do something about this. Everybody's at risk. Let's pass some gun reform or whatever. Now it's just like yawn and everybody keeps moving. And that's how people are looking at genocide now too. To be fair, it's really the politicians who are overwhelmingly lined up on the wrong side of this. And the polling data, the people are on the right side, but somebody could be on the right side and just sort of be like, I think this is wrong. What am I going to do about it? Right? Then some people stand up and actually try to do something about it. And he tries to smack them back down.
Do I even know what the fuck I'm talking about?
You definitely don't. That's for sure.
Am I really here for the cause, or is the cause here to bring you me? Hey, if it makes you feel good to cosplay as revolutionaries, knock yourself out. Burn yourself out. Just don't drag Gaza into it.
Loathsome.
So... throwing stuff on paintings is just stupid.
Look, I critique that protest too. But there's no way these people could protest where he would say, I agree with you, because he disagrees with them on the substance. He's a Zionist. He's a dyed-in-the-wool Zionist. He loves Netanyahu. He defends Netanyahu. He's interviewed Netanyahu and thrown softballs down the center of the fucking plate. That's what's at the core of this. Spare me your fucking, you know, strategy nitpicking bullshit.
No one sees mashed potatoes on a Monet and thinks, he's got a point, I should recycle my cans. Last week, Google employees staged a sit-in to protest their company doing business with Israel. Their t-shirt said, Googlers against genocide, but they could have just as well said, look at me, see me. And Google did see them, to the door.
Look at these guys.
They fired all 28 of them the next day. Yes, Cahoney Award coming to you guys next year.
Mr. Free Speech. Mr. Free Speech. All of a sudden, not a concern at all about free speech. Those people were trying to get Google to divest their financial entanglements with Israel. Perfectly reasonable. It's like during the midst of apartheid South Africa, trying to working at a company that works with South Africa, trying to get them to cut off ties. Perfectly reasonable. He says, no, that's a fireable offense. What happened, Bill? Mr. Free Speech? These people all flip on a fucking dime, man.
But maybe the question that today's protester needs to ask themselves more than any other is, why do I care so much about this particular cause? North Korea starves its people.
China, we don't fund them.
Puts them in concentration camps. Myanmar brutalizes the Rohingya.
We don't fund them.
Haram kidnaps whole villages of women.
We don't fund them.
Of Burundi says gays should be stoned to death because they, quote, deserve it.
We don't fund them.
Nothing? Ukraine? Maybe if these...
We are funding Ukraine.
Google employees have the slightest idea what kind of fundamentalist oppressive assholes they're supporting. Hamas, the Houthis, Hezbollah, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. They might take it a little easier on the world's greatest monster, Genocide Joe.
I'm going to take my arm off with a fucking hatchet. I'm going to take my arm off with a hatchet. I'm going to shove my leg in a fucking meat grinder. What are we doing here? All these protesters support Hamas and the Houthis and Iran. All the protesters just want to stop Israel from carpet bombing babies with our weapons. Full stop. Full stop. I can't, man. Why do I bother? I don't know why I do this job. I don't know why I do it. I don't. His points are so bad, it's making me rethink the ability for anybody to convince anybody else of anything. That's how bad they are. Because he knows all this is bullshit. He knows all this is bullshit. He knows that these pro-Palestine protesters on college campus aren't fucking out there saying glory to Hezbollah. Right? Like...
Genocide, by the way, is when you want to wipe out an entire people. That's
in whole or in part. Srebrenica, there was 6,000 people killed. That's considered a genocide.
The goal of Hamas. That's what from the river to the sea means. Hamas would do that to Israel, but can't. Israel could do that to them, but doesn't.
They are doing that. They are fucking doing 42,000 Palestinians killed. 2 million Gazans now homeless because of Israel's ruthless carpet bombing campaign. A total medieval siege. They are doing that. And this asshole, even if Israel were to kill 2.3 million Palestinians, he'd be like, well, they were defending themselves. And to the idea, oh, Hamas wants to wipe Israel off the map. Yeah, they do. And the core of that is the occupation. And there have been times when they say, hey, man, we'll take the 67 borders. And what does Israel do? No, fuck you. You're not getting that either. You are breeding the sort of resentment and hatred towards Israel that you say you're against. You're breeding it. The 2018 Great March of Return, they tried to be peaceful. Palestinians tried to be peaceful, and they got fucking sniped and murdered. So now they fight back violently, and you're like, oh, terrorists, kill them all. And by the way, let's be clear, Hamas, they don't have the firepower to take out fucking 10% of Israel, never mind all of Israel, whereas Israel is armed to the teeth, and they are taking out all of Gaza. His view of the situation is so fucking warped, it is mind-numbing. Oh, yeah. Oh, Hamas bad. Oh, what a fucking hero you are. How brave you are. Oh, yeah. I'm going to clap for Hamas being bad. Oh, yeah. Well, throw in Al-Qaeda being bad, too, you fucking courageous man. Oh, yeah.
You know how you could find that out? Google it.
All right. You guys get the gist of it. He's getting worse. He's getting worse by the day. He's got Republican brainworms. He's one of the most hardcore Zionists I've ever seen. He's not even trying to understand where these protesters are coming from. He's smearing them as all narcissistic and selfish and lazy and unemployed and every negative thing under the sun. And you know what? Here's the final point I'll make. You think all these arguments weren't used against the anti-Vietnam War protesters at the time? You bet your ass they were used. In fact, here's a little clip of Bill Maher on Politically Incorrect. It might surprise you what side of the Vietnam War, what his position was on the issue of the Vietnam War. Watch this.
Hearing nothing but Vietnam the last couple of weeks, and I have to tell you, it bothers me that there is this conventional wisdom that is in every article I hear, every article I read, every news report I hear about Vietnam was a wasted war. We should never have gone. I have said many times on the show, I thought it was a necessary war. You know,
So the guy who's concern trolling, oh, you're not doing the protest the right way. Oh, let me help you with better tactics. He's just against their position. He's pro-Israel. He's a Zionist. He wants to see Gaza wiped out. That's why he's taking the position he's taking. It's not good faith criticism about you're doing the strategy wrong. And by the same token, now he postures, oh yeah, I was Mr. Lefty for a while. He was pro-Vietnam War. So the same arguments, by the way, that everybody was making about the Vietnam War protesters are lazy and unemployed and selfish and narcissistic. He would have been right there fucking cheering it along because he's telling you here, I think Vietnam was a necessary war.
Very nice for Ronald Reagan, an actor playing the president, to go over to the Berlin Wall and say, tear down that wall. That is not what won the Cold War. That was a wonderful money shot.
It's true.
What it was a good photo op. What won the Cold War was we being demonstrating to the bullies of the world that we would put ourselves on the line and spend lives. The Vietnam War didn't have to happen in Vietnam, but it had to happen somewhere.
They went in and wasted lives and all you know, I got family on the wall. These are wasted lives.
Wait a second. Sometimes wasted lives are unwasted lives. In Korea, they fought a battle called Hill 53. And when it was over, they said it had no strategic value. Why did we fight it? And the guy said, that's the point. It had no strategic value. We had to.
We were willing to do that.
Look at baby Kyle. Look at that little chunky boy. Okay, anyway. Dark, dude. So dark. He was pro-Vietnam War. Now he's pro-genocide in Gaza. And we'll end with this. The other asshole that was on the panel, the guy who looks like he's from the movie Get Out, and he would vote for Obama a third time while supporting carpet-bombing Palestinian babies. Professor says college students aren't having enough sex, so they're turning to anti-Israel protests. So we got they're lazy, they're unemployed, they're narcissistic, they're selfish, and they're just trying to get laid. I'm a big believer in Occam's razor. The most straightforward answer is usually the correct answer. Occam's razor in this instance is people are tired of seeing toddlers get carpet bombed. That might not motivate these people because they're loathsome, immoral assholes, but it motivates us. So Bill Barr sat down for an interview with CNN. He came out the other day and said, yeah, I'm going to vote for Trump, even though he very famously sort of led the charge in saying, this guy is trying to get the election overthrown. This guy is trying to direct me to seize voting machines and like declare him the winner, send out a fake memo saying we need to investigate the voter fraud. So people are kind of shocked that here you have a guy who knows Trump is dangerous, knows Trump is an authoritarian, knows he tried to stay in power, knows he'll probably do it again. And he comes out and he's like, well, I mean, I like tax cuts, so what am I going to do? I'm going to support him. So he goes on CNN. He gets pressed a little bit here and there. But that's not the part I'm really interested in. The part I'm interested in is what you're about to see here. He sort of verifies or confirms something which is astonishing about Trump and stuff he would say behind the scenes. And look at how he tries to fucking, like, brush it off as if it's nothing. This is incredible. Watch this.
I hear from a lot of Republicans who defend Trump saying, well, that's a hypothetical and that's ridiculous. But Alyssa Farah Griffin, who was Trump's communications director, posted yesterday and said that you were present at a moment when Trump suggested executing the person who leaked information that he went to the White House bunker when those George Floyd protests were happening outside the White House. Do you remember that?
I remember him being very mad about that. I actually don't remember him saying executing, but I wouldn't dispute it. You know, I mean, it doesn't sound, I mean, the president would lose his temper and say things like that. I doubt he would have actually carried it out. I don't, you know.
But he would say that on other occasions?
You said the president, you know, the president had, I think people sometimes took him too literally. And you know, he would say things like similar to that in occasions to blow off steam. But I wouldn't take him literally every time he did it.
Why not?
Because at the end of the day, it wouldn't be carried out and you could talk sense.
But just because it's not carried out and you could talk sense into him, doesn't that still mean that the threat is there?
So first of all, I guarantee you the other presidents have never been like, yeah, we should fucking execute this whistleblower. I guarantee you, with the exception of Hillary, but she was never president because she said that about Julian Assange. And by the way, Mike Pompeo was in Trump's administration. He was the CIA director and he wanted to assassinate Assange as well. Okay, so that's the first point. The second point is, when Trump was president the first time, he might become one a second time, but when he was in there, he was surrounded by a bunch of people who are more reasonable, who respect to one extent or another the guardrails of the system more, people like Bill Barr, people like Mick Mulvaney, right? And they would always reel him in. The generals had to intervene to get him to not invoke the Insurrection Act to crack skulls of protesters. So you had something baked into the system that really would like sort of reel him in at the last minute. Now, by the way, every now and then there'd be a rare instance where Trump was actually right and the system was wrong. For example, when Trump famously was like, "We're getting out of Afghanistan," he did his whole tweet thread about it. And then the generals visited him and were like, "Sir, that's not happening." And then it didn't happen. Right. That was an instance where I wish his word won out and he stuck to his guns. Right. But in most instances, he would try to take it way too far and he would get reeled back in. And what Bill Barr is saying here is, yeah, he says those things, but he never did it. So, like, is it really that big of a deal? Well, here's the problem, Bill. If he's in there again, he will not be surrounded by people like you or Mick Mulvaney or any of the more establishment figures who have at least some minimal respect for the guardrails of the system. And so the next time he goes in there and he says, yeah, we should execute this person or that person, either his little loyal fucking sycophants will do it, or best case scenario, you could maybe haggle him down to, yeah, let's imprison some of these motherfuckers without any legitimate charges and throw away the key, right? Let's do political prisoners. Let's have hostages. Let's use the force of the state to try to drive our agenda through and get our agenda home and remove any opposition to it. So he's verifying that Trump used to say, so yeah, we should kill that motherfucker, right? Which is insane that a president says that and does that. But now he's like, yeah, I want him in there again. And like I said, they'll either do it this time because he's going to be surrounded by MAGA loyalist sycophants, or they'll, hey, that's too extreme. Let's just imprison them. Jesus Christ, man. And by the way, you can thank other responsible members of the system for getting us to this point too, because they would skirt the rules every now and then as well. Everybody remembers when Obama did a drone strike on an American citizen. No trial, no due process, just murdered an American citizen. Okay, well, now you opened the door for that to be a thing. And Trump's going to take it a little further. And he's going to go a little further than that. And next thing you know, yeah, we're looking at an authoritarian nightmare if he were to get in there again. And so for him to be so nonchalant about this, oh yeah, the president was blowing off steam. Well, what happens when everybody around him takes him seriously? No, that could never happen here. There's already been like 47 things that we thought could never happen here that have happened here. So spare me that, like, oh, that seems like it wouldn't happen. It's too extreme. I can't imagine that. Well, again, so many other things have happened that we could have never imagined. They happened. And I don't know why this is any different. I don't. So buckle up, man. It's going to get ugly. This story absolutely pissed me off. This is from The Intercept, from Ken Klippenstein and Daniel Bogoslaw. As Biden cheers TikTok ban, White House embraces TikTok influencers. You literally can't make this up, man. So we discussed the bill the other day. There was a bill that funded Israel, funded Ukraine, funded Taiwan, and banned TikTok. Did all those things individually in the House, and it got to the Senate. They did it as one package. Biden's in favor. Here we are. But he just launched his own TikTok account. That wasn't that long ago. He did his own he's doing the whole, you know, hey, I'm Grandpa Joe here, and look at me in my aviators, and look at me, look at my ice cream cone, bro. Look at my ice cream cone, bro. And then as he's doing that, as he's posting TikTok videos, as he's asking TikTok influencers for an endorsement, the motherfucker banned TikTok. As Congress and the National Security State continue their quest to ban the TikTok social media platform in the United States, President Joe Biden has been courting TikTok influencers to help him shore up youth support for his reelection. While the administration has been publicly casting TikTok as a grave threat to American security, the White House has quietly hosted a number of influencers to pitch them on pro-Biden content. Don't jump, I need you, Biden joked to a group of TikTok influencers as he walked by the group standing on the White House balcony on his way to deliver his State of the Union speech earlier this year. In recent months, some of the biggest TikTok users, with accounts boasting millions of followers, have visited the White House. Visitor logs reveal. Since September alone, some of the most prominent examples include Jason Linton, a dad who posts wholesome content about his family and whose TikTok account, Dad Life Jason, has 13.8 million followers. Michael Jinchaya, who goes by Mikey Angelo on the handle MR Grand Official, 3.5 million followers, a young entertainer who specializes in rap recap videos. Mona Swain, 1.9 million followers, theater enthusiast. Alexander Doten, space communicator who previously worked for NASA, has 2.3 million followers. Andrew Townsend, 3.1 million followers. Alex Perlman, 2.6 million followers. He's a comedian. Josh Health God. 5.5 million followers, he's an LGBTQ advocate. Perhaps the biggest TikTok hobnobbing at the White House was Onaya Johnson, a viral sensation famous for his angry reaction videos, boasting 27 million followers. He visited the White House on September 27th. Johnson has since deleted his account after being arrested for domestic violence. Jesus. By the way, let's pause here for a second. What does it say about Biden that the people from TikTok who he's snuggling up to, he's not going to political content creators. He's not finding lefty, Democratic adjacent, like, yeah, let's go to the political accounts. Why? Because they all fucking hate him now. With the genocide in Gaza, the arming and the funding of Israel as they carpet bomb children. They're all sick of it. Yeah, maybe there's a handful of creators on YouTube or on TikTok or on some other platforms that are political that they snuggled up to, but it's few and far between. It's few and far between. They have to go to all these other, this comedian and this person and that person. Why? Because those motherfuckers don't know nearly as much about politics. And they're like, okay, I don't know. It's the president. Sure. I'll meet with the president. I'll post some shit in favor of him. How pathetic is that, man? How pathetic is that? Jesus Christ. It's like if I hired some, like, basket weavers to tell you how great I am at political commentary. Right? It's like, that's, it's got nothing. Here's a Pokemon card collector to tell you Kyle is the best political pundit in the game. Like, what? Why should anybody take that seriously? Jesus Christ. Each of these TikTokers' meetings was coordinated by White House Deputy Director of Partnerships Morgan McNaughton, who herself has a background with the company. She was hired away last year from Palette, a social media talent management company that specializes in TikTok personalities. Jesus Christ, this stuff is also commercialized. Whatever happened to the days of, I'm going to sound like the old cranky guy now. And back in my day, you would just fire up a camera and start talking and post it on YouTube. While there, McNaughton helped found the political group TikTok for Biden, oh my god, since renamed Gen Z for Change. Gen Z for Change. I'm pretty sure the Gen Zers for Change are the ones who are like, stop the genocide. Many of the TikTok users who visited the White House are themselves represented by Palette. So another look, this is all astroturfed. In 2022, Palette received $200,000 payment from the Democratic National Committee for paid media. Oh my god. Oh my god, they're paying these motherfuckers in order to get their support. According to the Washington Post, Taylor Lorenz, Palette was paid a retainer from the DNC to cover expenses for 8 TikTok creators to travel to Washington in hopes for wooing them in the run-up to the midterm elections, resulting in an Oval Office meeting with Biden. Oh, this is the saddest thing I've ever heard. And as he's courting these people, how about I ban your way of making a living? How about that? Look, I know I'm talking shit, but I got nothing against these random TikTokers, right? And now this dude's trying to fucking ban your livelihood. And he wanted to snuggle up to you in the process. What a fucking snake. But honestly, look, I'm gonna keep it real. I think he's too far gone mentally to even realize the hypocrisy of this, right? For all he knows, it's a different fucking platform that the people that he's coming to meet and, you know, he's getting videos with them and whatnot. Those are different people than when I banned TikTok, Big Bad China or something, right? Like, in his mind, he probably thinks these things are disconnected. Because he's gonzo, son. God, I hate these people so much. You have no idea how much I hate these people. We're in a fucking election year. Biden is already struggling massively with young voters. Then what does he do? Bans their favorite social media app. What am I going to do with this guy? What am I going to do with these people? They're so gone. They're so gone. I can't. Every day it gets worse, dude. Every day. That's the show. All right, well, there you go. All right, guys, that's the show. I love y'all very much. You know the drill. Please click like, click subscribe, all that fun stuff. Click that bell icon so you get a notification every single time a video drops. Subscribe to Crystal Kyle and Friends as well. That link is below. You could tip on Patreon. I'm very thankful for that because I've never talked to an advertiser. You guys help fund this show from the ground up. No Biden visits from this guy. That's for damn sure. I am not going to go there and give this guy what he desires deeply, which is youth approval, even though he wants to do fuck all for the youth at the moment. He'd rather genocide Gaza than serve his base. But anyway, there you have it. I love you guys. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Peace.